I suppose I've got one, and I'm trying to think of the actor. I picture him. He's a little German guy, got big bulging eyes.
How old is this film?
Oh, it'd be 1940s. It's around
Peter Lorre?
Peter Lorre, exactly, exactly.
1940s.
Right, so Peter Lorre plays a child killer. And I can't remember whether he was a molester or not. And, you know, it becomes so horrific, his acts of violence against the kids. He, all of the people who are the down and outs, all the worst dregs in society, get together and, you know, they're going to catch him. And they catch him and they have a trial for him, like a kangaroo trial. And, you know, they're up there condemning him, you know, for his actions. And, you know, like, he's horrified. You know, he's saying, I can't help myself. I know there's something the matter with me. He's admitting everything that is wrong with him, but he can't do nothing about it. And then he you know, comments on all of the people who were murderers and thieves and every other sort of cutthroat person he could have, you know, which that picture sort of embodied. And, you know, like, he was putting it back on them. I know what I am. But look at yourself first. How can you judge me? So, yeah, that's my story. And I reckon that was a brilliant, brilliant movie.
I get, every time I watch it, I get a lot from The Life of Brian, which overtly is a replay of the Gospel. And there's so much which is, it speaks to me so much of, you know, almost the inner mind of Christ and the tension between him and the following crowds pedestalising him and his sort of, you know,
he's just a very naughty boy.
All that. But you know, it's not, it's almost not disguised, and yet you still got to see it in the characterisation of this person who's discovering that, you know, he's got a purpose to his life.
I actually always say that today's church is the movies, because that is what most people get their whole spiritual teachings from. Yeah. I think that's the main way that people do these days, yeah. And there are some very good movies out there.
A movie speaks 1,000 pictures.
And of course there's always music, as it is in heaven.
And it's often the music too, which is very, it's almost like something that's not consciously, that people are not consciously aware of, as you said about Hercules.
Yeah.
That people are influenced in their perception of the story and what goes on and the symbolism in the content, not just by what they understand, but also by what they feel about it, and they get an inkling of what's about to happen based on the music, and it's just this undercurrent of emotional flow. And it's amazing that we're not aware of it a lot. You probably would be more so.
Yeah, I'm never aware of it, but it really, I know it influences me.
I was actually thinking of the music before. When you were talking, for some reason, I was hearing A Tale of Two Cities and the music on that. Now things are much more subtle, whereas then you were told, you know, well, you were always told something was about to happen, but especially when it had happened, you were told how to respond. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, yes, through the music, now it's much more, as you say, not even aware of it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But it is very powerful. It's incredibly powerful. Yeah. I've got on our DVD of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, there's an interview with John Williams, who wrote the music, and there's a really there's an interesting little section where he says, well, this is how the music works, and he actually illustrates it. They show you the clip, and then they show you the clip with the music, and you get to sit there and watch the two and feel the difference in response to having the music as to not. Nice. And it's quite interesting.
I heard the music from Raging Bull. It was not a great classical knowledge in classical, but this
I said, yeah, that's fabulous music. And they said it was on the radio, and they said it was from Raging Bull. And they said it was the intermezzo from Mascagni's thing, Cavaliere Rusticano. And I imagined the scene, because it was really haunting, beautifully slow, you know, really sentimental, but just really tear-jerking. Oh, yes, the boxer walking in the rain, you know, beaten to a, you know, or, you know, sad lost his girlfriend, you know, and this is in the film. And this is about saying about the influence of music on emotions. In the film, it was nothing like that at all. It was in the middle of the fight. So these two blokes bumping hell out of each other. And I thought, why would you do that? And then I realised, this is not a happy thing for the boxer. Yeah. You know, the music made you think, well, yeah, this is, you know, yeah, they're punching you. You'd expect, but it was, this is something else is happening. And that was a beautiful way of showing how emotionally you can start influencing your mind. Before I forget, and I'm going to roll, Richard Dawkins. I like people like Richard Dawkins. I've mentioned to you a few times because he ups your ante on what the level of... To go one round with Richard Dawkins and come off from the referees as saying draw, I think would be a fabulous achievement because he argues very well. I don't agree with his conclusions, but he shows you this is a level of argument and knowledge of what you've got to have present on that level to just at least come out even. So I like him. And then... the film, recent one with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah.
The Gran Torino.
The story of this grumpy old war veteran living next door to some Asian people, and he's grumpy about everything, his family, etc. But he finally, as penance for this person, this young kid next door, attempting to steal his Gran Torino car, which is a prized possession, for many people, his family says he has to pay restitution, he has to work for you for 3 days or whatever. So he manages to get up a relationship with him and become sort of like a father to him. And in the end, they're terrorised by this gang of the Asian people of his own ilk. They're terrorising him because he wouldn't join their gang. And then they do horror, they shoot up the neighbours, their house, they rape his sister. And things are not looking good for this young chap's future, the whole family's future, and it's a bit of a huge problem. And this young kid, once these sisters rape, he says, "Gotta go out and get him, gotta go out and get him." And he said, "No, you never take revenge when you have blood, so you just gotta think, just calmly." He had to eventually lock this kid up because he was, you know, really trying to go out. And you see Clint Eastwood just, you know, cleaning himself, shaving. You know, he thinks that, you can see him thinking a lot about what to do. Was in the Catholic Church, which he dismisses a lot of rubbish. He did go to the priest, I think. He cleaned himself up, had a nice shave, haircut, new suit, everything. Went out to the gang's house and stood in front of the house because he knew they all carried guns and everything.
With the lights out.
And then he said, "Hey, you know, I want to speak to someone in my home," and they all come out and they see him there. And of course, they get their guns out because he'd always already threatened them with guns when they were doing things, just standing there, and he makes a couple of moves into his shirt, you know, and then takes it back. I'm just getting, you know, some matches or something, and then they're all getting very edgy, and then he puts his hand into his shirt, and then they panic and they shoot him. But by this time, because of all the noise and the shouting, every house in the street's watching, so there are countless witnesses. And he, just before he put his hand into his shirt, he said, "Holy Mary, Mother of God," or something like that, before they shot him, because then he was going to shoot him. And when the police came and, of course, arrested them, because this was clear murder, and this was his way of getting the gang out of his neighbours' life by sacrificing himself so they'd get locked away, and that's how they would not be in trouble, not by his friend getting into jail for shooting crooks that should be shot, perhaps, but it's going to reverberate in you. And then, of course, his hand fell away, and they said there was no gun, there was a box of matches. So he knew, you know, there was no gun, there'd be no problem. But that was self-sacrifice for someone else.
Mm-hmm. To eliminate evil.
To eliminate evil, yeah, he put himself. And the young chap next door got his car in his will, not his family, because, again, it was sort of a dysfunctional.
David, I've had a movie recommended to me, I haven't seen it yet, called Hedgehog, or The Hedgehog. It's a French movie about a teenage girl who wants to kill herself and starts keeping a diary and then gets a relationship with a few people in the block of units, and it's supposed to be very good on teenage angst. You might enjoy that.
There was a significant moment in part one of Lord of the Rings, and I've forgotten who was the original hobbit to find the ring.
Bilbo,
yes. Bilbo. So he gives up the ring, and I think Frodo inherits it and needs to take it to the volcano to destroy it. Anyway, Bilbo wants to see it just for one last time. And when he sees it, his appearance changes. You can see that there's like a devilish type of appearance just manifesting itself, and then he controls himself and it goes. But I thought that's a wonderful illustration of somehow us being prone to negative influences, and we have to control it. And I thought that was just a wonderful description of it.
Oh yeah, Tolkien was well versed in all the Nordic sagas, and this ring is like the connection with the divine, in a sense. It's that marriage to the church, and everybody wants that power, you know. And they want to force their way past the cherubim into the the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
So it becomes an evil, or that becomes an evil, and the represent, you know, the external following of this ring rather than the real thing it represents, it becomes an evil that he has to destroy. The thing that brought that to mind is the Beowulf is another one which I know that Tolkien is familiar with, but that's one of my favourite movies because, again, it's the self versus non-self or community self, and you know, that whole struggle, the fact that the king has lost his connection with the ability to fight the evil that assails them every night, and he has to call in the thane from the Danish lands to come and be the hero to set them free because he has that special knowledge and that special ability. It's kind of a story of internal dynamics, you know, in an external piece of writing, but it was held in very high regard for a long time, and you can see why. It holds value just like what we're studying here. It's great value.
Ruth mentioned that people perhaps can relate to movies and get their spiritual nourishment that way. There's a book that Julian used in one of his services, Spiritual Literacy. And the authors have a website, I think, called Practical Spirituality, where they have qualities and they reference it to movies or books. So I thought that was a lovely, lovely website because it guides people to, if they want to explore a particular quality, virtue, then they recommend particular movies, and they review movies, have lots of links. So that's a follow-on from the authors of that book, Spiritual Literacy.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't come across that. That sounds like a good
good
resource.
Is that what the website is,
Michael? I can check. But that's what comes into my mind. Yeah. I think it's practicalspirituality.com. But I'll verify that and come back to you on it.
Okay. Oh, that's very interesting.
Go on, Anne.
This isn't in answer to your question, but it's raising a query from the media aspect of it. I would like to hear other people's point of view. I felt very uncomfortable when I heard Julia Gillard admit in front of the country that she had no faith, that she was an agnostic. And whilst I admired her honesty, and I wouldn't want her to pretend that she had a faith when she didn't, I felt as if this country would be bereft of any guidance in our politics because of her not having a faith, and I feel very uncomfortable about it. Haven't had anybody to discuss it with.
Can I comment on that? Sorry, Michael.
Please.
Just one comment on that. I increasingly feel that when people disavow themselves of a conscious belief system, it really is of little import to me. I hope this is coming clear, because I actually feel that, you know, Swedenborg emphasizes not belief but actually life, practice, goodness, as being heavenly, the prime essential for a heavenly experience in life. And I see Julia Gillard, whatever else I see her as, I see her as somebody, and you say honest to come out with it, I see her as somebody who embodies a very sincere, I'm giving my politics away here, a very sincere quasi-religious handling of community, life, provision, welfare, education, and so on, all of which to me are the intrinsics of religion. Now, if you say God, then if I was pushed, I would actually say I don't really see much difference between that outlook of Julia Gillard and somebody who is doing the same but with a God base in their mind. So it doesn't repel, that's a terrible way of putting it, but it doesn't bother me. It really ultimately doesn't bother me because I feel she's being religious in her own religious conviction.
I'm very glad you feel that way, and
I see it actually, her comment, as a good thing, because of the generation she comes from. If you declare you have a belief in God, it may be one of those brainwashed beliefs of all the hangings on that people have, and there's no heart to it, it's all in the mind. Whereas exactly what you're saying, she's actually living it, unaware of the source of it all, but she hasn't got all those religious hang-ups that we attach to it. Mm-hmm. And so I think her comment is actually a very good comment. It's the beginning of a new way of life for her, because she's going to live it, and then eventually she'll just register where it's coming from. Yeah.
It'd be worse somebody swearing on the Bible being inaugurated when they don't have any belief in that. So at least it's not hypocritical. It's honesty coming out, which is good. Whether you like it or prefer to have somebody that is obviously, is guided, and the only way that we can test that is when they acknowledge some kind of belief system, which she doesn't, so you don't know where the foundations are. Now she's aiming a nice world,
I'd just like to put it slightly differently. I had some friends who claimed quite loudly that they were atheists, not agnostics, but atheists. And interestingly, I remember speaking to Bernard Wilmot about it, because these people had the most beautiful garden. An absolutely treasured garden that they spent an enormous amount of time in. And the fruit trees had beautiful, beautiful fruit, and the flowers had beautiful flowers. And I can remember saying to Bernard, I really can't believe that they're atheists because they have such a beautiful garden. With Julia Gillard, I don't see her beautiful garden. So I guess that's the difference.
Although I do agree with what Julian and Elizabeth said, for two reasons. One is that there is no spiritual growth without a ruthless inner honesty. Now, that honesty may be an outer honesty, but it's at least something that's authentic from a person in a higher position. It means that people will be more likely to follow suit. And the second reason is that what people seem to want in their leaders at the moment, which is popular, proven by popular research, is number one, authenticity. Which means that they are seen to be truly themselves rather than some pretense, some facade, some sort of external interface. For those two reasons, I think it's a wonderful example so that people can say, oh, she's honest, I can be honest, I'm not going to be raked over the coals for saying something I feel. I can be open about it, and this openness may grow into an honest and open discussion, which may change all those people's minds in one way or another, just like our minds have been changed along the way by our fellows who've you know, truly given us some good feedback.
Well, you know, in fairness, I can't see Kevin Rudd's beautiful garden, and I can't see Tony Abbott's beautiful garden, and they're both churchgoers, so...
Well, yes.
And the people with the beautiful garden have rejected God. The God of their upbringing may be this horrible, nasty person.
Yes.
If you had introduced them to the new church, they may say, ah, that's the God I've been looking for all the time. Yes, I really did think he did exist, but I didn't like the Catholic God or whatever. So.
There's one thing I remember about Bernard Wilmot. He had a most wonderful garden.
Yes.
He had a most wonderful, that's the one thing I remember. Mm-hmm.
You know, there was just one. I got one. There was. I don't know if this has got anything to do with it now, but I know a band, and they're a Europe band. I think they're Swiss or Swedish or something like that. And their name is Uwe, and they're all intelligent guys. They all went to university, and you know, they studied music, and you know, they really opposed the religion of the day, so the Christian religion. You know, they hated it. They hated being fed down their throats, and they hated, you know, faking it to everybody, you know, their peers, you know, that we're good Christians, we, you know, we do what's expected of us, and so you shouldn't think badly of us. But they rebelled against it real badly, and they went totally against the religion altogether. But somewhere along the line, they come across Swedenborg's book, Heaven and Hell, and they wrote an album about it. So there's a whole album by Uwe about heaven and hell, and it's actually called Heaven and Hell. So,
oh, wow.
You know, that I find that amazing.
I went to a seminar talking about Generation Y.
Yeah.
And characteristics, how to deal with them, how to see it from the world from their viewpoint, the influences of technology, etc. on them. And one of the things that they said was that a lot of people complain, and I was one of them, that's why my ears picked up, complain about young kids because they're disrespectful, you know. We were told that, you know, you said yes sir, or your parents, you were very polite, or you met someone in the street, or to your teachers, you said yes sir, etc. But when you were alone with your mates, you slagged them, or, you know, or you did all the things because you really didn't like them.
Yeah.
So there's a bit more honesty in Generation Y.
They
don't like you, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the spiritual honesty, which you're right, that is more honest.
Yeah.
I'd rather know that so I can fix something if it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the discussion.
Yeah, in regards to dinner, we're going to have a banquet at a Thai restaurant. I thought banquet was the easiest way to facilitate eating, otherwise we'd be waiting for a long time for the meal to be served. Now, the Thai restaurant is up on Cox's Road, and I'm thinking it would be good to carpool and go into each other's cars. Perhaps the people parked in the car park can just park in the front and people can hop in, and I could lead the way to where this place is. Otherwise, I could leave two menus, which has the address, and you can work it out, drive there yourself.
How far is it?
It's just 5 minutes.
Yes,
it's not the one just around the corner.
No.
That one wasn't good.
Yes, I considered that, but I picked another one. So my way of getting there would be to just go two streets up, turn right, go right to Epping Road, turn left, go to the lights, first lights, turn left, and go past the shops most of the way, and just outside the Holy Spirit School, parked on the left-hand side, and the restaurant is upstairs.
What's it called? Sorry.
I think it's called Paran. I'll just...
This is Cox's Road.
Navigator.
Let's follow.
It's the first traffic light.
On the right.
Go up Wicks Road.
Keep going, and it's the second light, and you turn off Cox's Road. First light.
Yes.
Turn off Cox's Road.
The restaurant is called Paran Thai Restaurant. It's 1.30
32 Cox's Road.
Right.
Lovely.
What number Cox's Road?
132.
What is it, a barrier?
Yes.
How does that work out? What will we pay?
It's $23.
Right. If anyone has any fees...
Julian's been paid.
Yeah, I've been paid.
Oh,
no.
Great.
If anybody
give
wants,
to Julian.
If anybody who's only here for today wants to settle up with me, I will gladly take money for it.
And David, for tonight's talk, are you wanting the tables to be left here or...?
I would actually push them temporarily.
So we can have a second set of rows.
Because I think there will be other people coming.
Okay.
So, I think it's okay.
Move them back against the wall.
Right, so
back against the wall. Yes,
I'll jump to Michael or whatever. Somebody will, you know, get me in and get me back. That's all. Yes.
You need him to get
Yeah,
I'll
do that.
Then AGM, which is a talk to which is Friday.
Right, you're here for three duration, so that's 40. And then you get back.
Okay.
No. Most others. You didn't have to send a deposit or anything like that. So sometime over tomorrow or Sunday. By Sunday lunch. So sometime now between now and Sunday lunch. You can make a direct deposit.
Are we coming back?
Yeah, that's all I've done.
Because it's not part of the seminar.
Tomorrow.
The month we've got.
Maybe we're going to get home.
Which is David.
The account, the but if you make the transaction, you should actually get receipted either then or at some point.
So you should put that away now. You should put that away. Stop.
It's still going.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm not fast on anywhere. So I'm not even going home.
It's put on hold.
Oh, good. Good to hear that. I've got a copy of it if you'd like to.
I have got one.
Oh, well, that's
good. But, I think that is one thing about the church is that we can actually talk about things. People may not agree, but it's good to have things there to make people.
I just said hello.
In the United Church, there was no discussion. I can remember raising with the moderator several years ago. Fruits of, works. It says in many places you say it works. No. If faith does it. She explained to me, and I didn't get it from there. Faith alone, she would say.
I believe it's like magic.
That's exactly right, Glenn. And so it's a conversation. I heard what you said, and even then I didn't.
So we'll set the room out.
Because you said in so many places that works. And you can't just say that, or you just say it. It's a good session, but I mean,
Now, I'm going to get my junk and drink mine.
Well, we do the same thing. You come with us. Oh, damn. He's still got that on hold. Oh, did I? It's going. Yeah, we just knew. I didn't want to touch it because I don't know how to handle it. Even Dave had a look and Dave said, No, I'm not going there either. And I said, No, I dare not touch anything. Yeah, does that mean that's on, or is it just the light reflecting on it? Because it is on.
No, it's still not.
And he thought it was on pause. He thought it might be on pause.
Really?
Or is it still recording? It's